At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
We've got Michelle Girard, Managing Director and Co-Head of Global Economics at NatWest Markets, and David Kotok, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Cumberland Advisors. David Kotok, it's been quite a while since we've talked.
Yes, Larry. I think McKinley was president when we first met.
You could be right. I was thinking more Grover Cleveland, who happens to be one of my favorite presidents, because he kept the dollar pegged to gold. But Michelle is way too young to remember all that stuff.
But David, it's so nice to speak to you. It's been a while for us, too. So great to be on with you today.
All right. So, Michelle.
Yes, thanks so much. It's like a reunion of many years. And Here we are, like Jack Benny. We're only 39 years old.
Yes, there you go.
So, Michelle, you're going to be nicer because you're a much nicer person than I am, particularly when it comes to the Fed. But I'm just going to say that I was underwhelmed by Jay Powell. I thought they're back to their old tricks. I mean, Steve Hanke said it earlier on the show. Steve Forbes mentioned it. You know, everyone's to blame for the inflation but the Fed, right? That's the deal. Putin, the Ukrainian war, COVID, the woman on the moon, everybody's to blame but the Fed. So I want to get your Fed take. Are you convinced now the Fed is on top of it? And I'm getting a lot of whispers, Wall Street whispers, that we've seen the worst of inflation and it's going to come back down. You buy it?
Well, there's a lot of things in that to unpack. I mean, I would say that I was curious about the decision that Powell made to take 75 basis points off the table.
Right.
Because I think in general he was trying to send a strong, and if you will, hawkish message that the Fed was committed to bringing inflation down. And we can talk about whether it's demand or supply related. As you said, they seem to focus very much on supply problems, which then opens them up to criticism because everyone says, well, then what is the Fed doing because they can't control, you know, the supply problems. And so there's all we can get into that. But he was trying to send a message. He was hearkening back to Volcker, you know, we'll do what's necessary, even if it means we risk recession. And then he turns around and acknowledging the uncertainty, but still says, but, you know, 75 is not something we're thinking about. And I don't know why he kind of sort of needed to do that. I will say with respect to inflation, the Fed is going to have a little bit of help here because on a year-over-year basis, the numbers are going to start to come down. You know, we're going to see this next week. We have the CPI coming out. We've seen a little bit of relief on the energy some relief that we saw in the energy front will come through. So, but the statistics, because we had such high numbers last year, are going to look like year-over-year we're moving in the right direction. So that may buy him some time. I just look worried about looking ahead. And in 2023 or later this year, if you settle out and as good as you get is maybe, you know, somewhere just under 4, like what do you do then? You know, when that benefit of the year-over-year numbers is not working in your favor, it's not as, you know, and you have to admit, you're still not comfortable. You're still not as, you know, low as you want it to be. Then what are you going to do? And so that, I think, is going to be the problem they face down the road.
You're still going to have monthly readings, though. I mean, I know the year-over-year basing stuff, but that's kind of, you know, statistical chicanery. I mean, really.
No, you're 100% right. Although, again, optically for the public, it, you know, which I think kind of looks at those annual inflation rates, It will take a little bit of pressure off. So it's a pure optics play. I don't really see you're going to get much improvement on the underlying rate of inflation. And that's why, you know, I believe once those optics sort of wash out, the Fed is going to be left having to acknowledge that the inflation rate is not where they want it to be.
Yeah. And David Kotok, we had Steve Hanke on earlier. He's a well-known monetarist, very smart guy. He said that basically, in his view, the basic inflation rate was going to be 6% for a couple of years. And I think that if that is the case, or nearly the case, I mean, it's not 10, but it's not 2 either, which is their ultimate target, or so they say. 6% inflation is rough stuff, and that's going to force them into doing things much more aggressively and brings, I think, you know, you go from inflation to stagflation to recession. I mean, what are the chances that you have that kind of difficult scenario?
Well, we have an aggregate demand shock, Larry. We have an aggregate supply shock. That's a double whammy that comes right on the heels of a similar 2 year ago pandemic double whammy, back to back. I was just sitting listening, thinking about the fact you and I met each other before you went to work for Ronald Reagan. And we were talking then about the late 70s, the very beginning of Volcker, the inflation characteristics that we will admit to viewers, or at least I will, that's how long we know each other.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the 70s. This is not an Arthur Burns easing Fed. This is a dual whammy. A pandemic comes along once in 100 years, and it's a shock of huge proportion. There's a great study done on that by the San Francisco Fed in a working paper in 2020 where they examined the economic shocks of pandemics, and they parallel wars. Similar, Spanish flu, World War I. So we're in a different construction than we're used to. And now we have the shooting war. So I'm not so sure we're going to get to 6, 8, 9% perpetual inflation. I think we could get some rollover. And I was flashing back in memory. I remember conversations with Michelle about housing rolling over, worrying about mortgages. You know, look at where we are now. We're above 5% on a 30-year mortgage. Suddenly the housing bubble may have a pin stuck into it. In fact, it's a conversation that could cause rollover of this inflation scare. Used car prices starting to roll over. There's possibilities it won't be as big as the warning that we get from the inflationists.
What are the chances? Well, let's take a break. We've got to take a break. We'll come back and talk about the potential for stagflation or the potential for recession, and then how high are interest rates going to go? The 10-year broke 3% this week. It looks like it's up there permanently. We can talk about that. And how high is the Fed's target rate going to have to go? Anyway, we're talking to David Kotok of Cumberland Advisors, Michelle Girard of NatWest Markets, and I'm Larry Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. I'm here talking stocks and the economy with Michelle Girard, Managing Director, Co-Head Global Economics, NatWest Markets, and David Kotok, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer of Cumberland Advisors. Michelle, a couple things. There's a lot of talk about recession. Let's start with that. Do you see any recession?
I think the risks have gone up. I would say they're you know, normally I think you always say there's, you know, 20% or something. I mean, I think they're higher than that. It is in our base case, but I am watchful of it. Not so much this year as next year. And again, I just think it's we do think inflation will be more persistent. I do think the Fed is going to have to raise rates more than people think. I don't think it's going to be a straight line. I think, you know, they'll move, they'll pause, they'll have to start, you know, start again. I think right now the economy does have some underlying resilience. I think the consumer still continues to be weathering the impact of higher food and energy prices in particular, well. But I think we're going to lose momentum because the Fed is going to have to I fear, having waited so long, the only way that the Fed will be able to get inflation down to toward the 2% mark is to orchestrate, you know, a much sharper turn down in demand.
So the 2 year CPI break-evens, the TIPS break-evens, closed at 415. So yep. Michelle, let's see, was actually fell 21 basis points, but it's 4.15. So that would suggest if the Fed's going to conquer inflation, we're going to need a Fed funds rate in the next 2 years that will be, I don't know, above 4.15. Call it 5. I don't care, whatever you want to call it. That's not on anybody's radar screen.
No, no, it isn't. At the moment, the market is pricing at a peak Fed funds rate of right around 3.25% in the, you know, kind of the second quarter of next year. And so they do, you know, there is an expectation policy will move restrictive, but ultimately that's, you know, I think that that isn't likely to probably be sufficient. And, you know, sort of given the expectations that we have, as I said, inflation settling out this year, core inflation settling out this year, finishing this year around 4%. And at the end of next year, even with the, you know, with the funds rate getting up to that level, we have inflation ending the year at 3%. So I just think the Fed is going to end up having to do more. And, but again, I don't think it'll be a one-way line. I actually think in the near term, markets are going to get more concerned about this growth story, about a growth slowdown. And the Fed may well, you know, end up having to, you know, to pause at some point and then restart. It won't be a straight line. But I just don't think when you look at the end state that I think people's expectations about what will probably be needed are too low.
David Kotak, how does a stock market investor play this?
You have to see the earnings. We're seeing them. And then it seems to me, Larry, you have to believe that the earnings growth rates will continue. And that's now in doubt for reasons Michelle just eloquently explained. My view is the fourth quarter of last year, the S&P 500 index delivered over $55 in earnings for the quarter. The original estimates before that quarter started to report were below 52. And as the earnings were delivered, market agents said, wait a minute, that's more than we expected. This first quarter, which is almost finished reporting, I think we have 80-some% of the companies reported, is doing it again. We're probably 55, 56 S&P 500 earnings for the first quarter, and no one expected it. We have the earnings growth rate continuing. We see the profit share. Now, there was a big threat long ago, you talked about it, others talked about it, that we would have higher corporate taxes, we would raise the corporate tax rate. All those approaches in politics are non-starters. And so we pencil out an earnings trajectory that will continue to grow. And if the earnings trajectory continues to grow, let's say 225 this year, 235 next year, and I'm using mild numbers. And Michelle's trajectory on interest rates is 4. Mine is in the 3s, but terminal rate somewhere around 4. The stock market is a bargain here. Everyone is scared. So when fear is driving the stock price, not the earnings momentum, stocks become very attractive. And we think that's an evolving situation.
What about if you get, say, the 10-year note finished at 312, so it's up 19 basis points this week. If that thing goes to 3.5 or 4, put it in that range, what happens to multiples, David Kotak?
Well, so let's use 4. Let's use the higher number.
Yeah.
And say, okay, what's the whole yield curve look like at that point in time? The 10-year is 4. Let's put the short-term rate at 3 or 3.25, a relatively flat curve but no inversion. And then you say, how would I calculate the equity risk premium on that outlook? And you would say, well, okay, I'll take 18, 19 times. That's not so bad.
No.
In a trajectory that is post-double whammy, aggregate supply shock, aggregate demand shock twice in a row in 2 years. That's not a bad picture.
Michelle Girard, how high the 10-year?
Well, you know, actually, Larry, We think you may be getting close to the top in the sense that it does feel like we keep saying peak hawkishness or concern about the Fed has been priced in. As I said, the market has priced in a lot of Fed tightening already, which is what has pushed us across the curve to get yields up above 3%. As I said, there's a high end terminal rate that's already been incorporated. And I do think that these growth concerns are going to mount. So there is, I think, a likelihood that we may actually be kind of near as high as we're going to get for the time being and see some, you know, a little bit like we saw after the, you know, after the meeting on Wednesday, some people willing to begin to buy at these and nibble at these higher attractive levels over 3%, again, as people become concerned about the growth outlook. So I actually, our view is actually over the near term, at these levels, it might, you know, you might actually see yields move a bit lower. And then again, perhaps later in the year, you know, see a reversal. I guess the other thing I would mention, too, I think is just worth pulling in. I do think if we think about globally the economic situation, I do think the other theme is a return to sort of U.S. exceptionalism. We may have issues, we may have growth concerns, but we are insulated to a much greater degree than the U.K., than Europe, in terms of the threats from the, you know, obviously the Ukraine invasion, in terms of China, which has got, you know, doubling down on its COVID strategy. There's a lot of concern about slower growth in China. You know, Europe and the U.K. are much more vulnerable to those developments. So I do think on a relative basis, while risk assets here may be more challenged, I do think the U.S. is going to continue to look like a relatively attractive place. I think the dollar outlook is positive. I think it's just worth mentioning that as well.
Well, you got to hope the cavalry is coming. I mean, the cavalry, if the cavalry comes, you're both, you know, we're going to be okay. But if these folks, if the Green New Deal wins and high taxes win, now the good part is we saved America and killed the bill. Biden doesn't want to take no for an answer, but he doesn't have the votes to do it. So we're going to take this all the way to the election. So if the cavalry comes, taxes stay low, we won't get the regulatory relief, but I think you got a shot at it. But I think you're both underestimating. I mean, I think Hanke's right. 6% inflation for the next 2 years. Okay? I'm going to give you the last word, David Kotov. 6% inflation for the next 2 years. There you go. Boom.
I'll take the under. The next time we visit together, we'll celebrate history. Both of you, be safe and careful. It's so nice to be back with both of you.
That's great. The cavalry's coming. 6% inflation. All good. Michelle Girard, thank you. David Kotok, thank you. Stock market investors, good luck, kids.